Good morning, dear listeners. Today we have the last talk in this series that was inspired by Catherine Austin Fitz's series on spiritual science. And now the last talk is called Rudolf Steiner's Core Mission. What is the core mission? The core mission is a term that was used in a conversation between Steiner and one of his pupils in 1922. The pupil knew that Steiner had spent many years of his life in Goethe, making Goethe fruitful, making Goethe fruitful for a new science, and he spent many, many years. And it was actually in Weimar in Germany. It was actually not his own task, in a way. It was the task of a scholar that became a friend of Steiner's early in Vienna. And this man is called Carl Julius Schröer. And Schröer was having the task to edit all the works by Goethe. And he did start, but he couldn't finish because he was not fit enough for the natural scientific writings of Goethe. So he looked for someone, and he found the young Rudolf Steiner suited best for this task, which meant that Steiner deviated from his own impulses and task for about, 12, 13 years. And that prompted Waldiane Stein in 1922 to ask Rudolf Steiner, what would have been your own mission if you would not have taken on the task that was actually Schröer's task, to edit Goethe? And of course, this was a very meaningful work. All his early philosophical works were born in this period, but it would have been the task of Schröer to show that Goethe could be used as a fundament for not only natural, but also spiritual science. And as he didn't do that, Steiner had to do it, otherwise his own mission would have been without a proper fundament. So Stein asked Steiner, what would have been your own task, Dr. Steiner? And then he promptly answered, reincarnation and karma, and added, and the social question. So in that year, 1922, upon a question, Steiner revealed that he would have directly gone to this subject and called it his core mission. Now this, I have made a little drawing here for a world historic perspective of the destiny of the idea or of the experience of reincarnation. And there is 2 years before and after Christ, and they mark a transition. Till the year 860 before Christ, that was the time of a Sesostris pharaoh, I think Sesostris the first, reincarnation was naturally experienced by all human beings. One didn't theorize about it, it was just a natural experience, as for us, seeing colors or having sense experiences is natural. At this time, it started to fade away. It became more feeling aware, a bit unconscious, and it got totally unconscious for most human beings in the time of the Christ. Reincarnation was not an actual experience anymore. Then, after Christ, it came slowly up into consciousness again, in steps. There were people coming again in the classic time in Germany, Wagner, Goethe, Emerson, Schiller. They spoke of reincarnation again, made poems, made art according to this notion. And in 1860, vis-a-vis have 1860 BC, we have the birth of Steiner. And Steiner was having the destiny of bringing into full consciousness again what was fully conscious in an old consciousness, of course. BC, it vanished, it came up again slowly, and he brought it into full blossoming. That was his task, to do this. So you can see this core mission, as he called it, was in a world historic evolution at a certain point. That is, I think, no accident that you have the same amount of years after Christ, the same amount of years before Christ, about this, well, destiny of the experience and then of the idea of reincarnation. This is just to give you an overview of where in history Steiner, with his core mission, is placed. Now, we have spoken about why it was so late in Steiner's life that he publicly spoke about reincarnation and karma. This was because he made a kind of a detour in his destiny, because Schröer was not able to do what actually was his task. Now, I want to show you a little anecdote which has also a humorous side in connection with this very serious subject. Reincarnation and karma in the modern form that was brought by Steiner from 1924 in his last year, it culminated. This was called a fiery truth, the fiery truth of reincarnation and karma, fire element. It has something, you could say, burning away all other notions of life that are usually there. That's much deeper. I condensed all the things I researched about this core mission by Steiner in one little book. I show it here to begin. Is that good? And I was asked to give a lecture on the contents in London. And I did go and had a kind of a lectrum in front of me. At the end of this lectrum, at the backside, was a lamp. And I happened to put the book into this lectrum with the lamp at the back. And suddenly, a good friend in the audience shouted, "Careful, careful, it's smoking." And what did happen? I was not aware that when I put the book into the lectern at the end, the hot lamp started, in fact, to hit the book. And you can see signs. That's why this is a very precious copy of this book. You can see the signs of this event. This is the proof that Thomas Meyer gave in London his first burning lecture on a burning subject. I found it very amazing. Of course, people then also were a bit hilarious when they saw that it could have become a fire if I wouldn't have gone immediately and take the book away. So that happens, can happen, when you talk about the fiery subject of reincarnation and karma. It never happened again. So let me now go through the successive steps in how Steiner found experiences of his own, of course, of reincarnation. He was, of course, aware. He accepted, but he didn't theorize. And he didn't look for anything like his own past incarnation. He was not interested. He knew it exists, but he waited. He waited till he was about 27 years. And there was a certain happening at a certain day of great importance in his biography. That happened in Vienna in 1888, when Steiner had got 27 years old. He was asked by his teacher, whom he really had a very deep, good connection, Schröer, to give a lecture in the Goetheverein, the Goethe Association in Vienna, on the subject of Goethe as father of a new aesthetics. One of the most interesting writings by Steiner, the lecture was worked through by him and published several times, because it is a kind of a seed also not only for the art theory, if you like, of Goethe and Steiner, but of anthroposophy. And this lecture must have been very intense. And in the audience, there was a man who Steiner knew from many occasions in private houses, meetings, and he was a Cistercian priest, this man, with the name of Neumann. Wilhelm Neumann. Now, this priest happened to be a very good knower of scholasticism, and he knew very well the philosophy of Thomas Aquinas, and he was known to be so learned that one said, Mr. Neumann knows the whole world plus three villages. That was his reputation. So this learned, good-natured man sat in the lecture. At the end, he came forward and said to Steiner, the seeds of this lecture are in Thomas Aquinas. Just like that. And as Steiner knew this man, of course, it was different. It was not just the association. It was like an arrow going to a very central layer in Steiner's being. And later, Steiner commented on that. Also in lectures on Thomas Aquinas he gave here in Dornach in 1920. And to a priest of the Christian community, he had talks with him. And he told him, in that moment, I became aware of my past incarnation, Aquinas. And he explained, this man spoke out of an unconscious memory of having been in that time as well, and obviously having had some relation to Aquinas at that time. So it came from a deep layer. And Steiner said, I repeat, in that moment, I became aware of my past incarnation. That was the beginning of developing what he now did, systematic research, karma and reincarnation. What I think is very, very significant is that Steiner, of course, he knew reincarnation as a fact, karma as a fact. He had experienced people after death going into the beyond sphere, but he didn't theorize about reincarnation, at least certainly not about his own past life. But now it was. And that is an important thing. First, Steiner had the inner sense of not being subjectively overinterested in himself, which is not, I can say, it's not common. Many people who are getting interested in karma and reincarnation, of course, want to know as soon as possible where they come from, themselves. It's natural. Not so with Steiner. He had the humbleness, the humility to think things come when they are ripe. This is not to be so looked for. So the first awareness of his past incarnation was brought to him by a man who was related to him, as he found out, in that time. Half a year, and this was, I must not forget, this was happening at a very important date. November the 9th is a key date in the history, also in the spiritual history of the Germanic, of the Germans. It's a date you find in the great poem of Goethe named Faust. In Faust, you have this date playing a role when Faust wants to go to the spiritual sphere called the mothers, the prototypes of everything being in the physical world, in the world. The archetype, the spiritual archetypes. When he wants to go there, and Mephisto, a sort of an Ahriman figure, tries to tell him, oh, this is not worth, forget it, you won't find anything, and so on. And Faust is insistent and says, yes. Mephisto says, you will find nothing. And Faust answers, in you nothing, I'm sure to find the universe. And he goes. And this is on the November 9th. And on November 9th, Steiner later comments to a pupil that we all already mentioned, I think, in our talk on agriculture. Gräfin Kaiserling once asked about certain key dates in the year. Whitsun, etc., and also the mid of autumn, the date 9th of November, and Steiner immediately says, that's the transition from Faust to the realm of the mothers. That is the date that is having a relation to the supersensible as well as to the lower subsensible, this shows in an eerie way in the 9th of November in the German history. It's a transition, it's a Schwellendatum. What is a Schwelle? Threshold. And the threshold can be transcended upwards, that is what Faust does, and every real German soul should do, but it can also go downwards, below the threshold, into a sub-physical sphere. And this is the date which was important in National Socialism, 9th of November. And it was also the date when the barrier between West and East was finally lifted. But as I said, it is an ambiguous state. It can be transcended in a positive or in a negative way. So it's very interesting that this experience, which awakened a higher consciousness in Steiner of his own past life, was happening at the 9th of November. Now, the real beginning of Steiner's, after this experience, karma research in a scientific way, not just having ideas and inspirations and so on, was another date of importance in the European history. It was the date of the 30th of January in the subsequent year. In the subsequent year, we have this date with a terrible tragedy happening. The Austrian Crown Prince Rudolf, together with his Maitress, committed suicide outside Vienna. And the whole European world was surprised or shocked about this happening, because there was not an obvious reason for this crime. He was just having, in the future, open the throne of the Habsburgian monarchy. He was the crown prince, and he could have become the Kaiser, the Tsar of the Hungarian Austrian monarchy. And at this date, he just went out of the world. Now, Steiner, in the next day, or maybe one or two days later, had, I think it was in the next day, made a visit to his teacher and friend Schröer in Vienna once more. And he was now having been asked to look through Schröer's comments on Faust by Goethe. And he did. So they had a meeting to discuss this work in progress. But before they discussed anything, probably just after Schröer opened the door, he just said, in respect to this event that was in the newspapers and everywhere, one word. What did he say? He said, Nero. And again, like with the word that was uttered by Neumann, here he had someone he knew very well, and he knew, of course, well, this is very strange. This might have a reason. Why does he say Nero? Now, that was the beginning of the conscious scientific research of the destiny of someone else. It was not his own, of course. And it is important to know, I think, for everyone who is interested in the spiritual scientific karma research, how serious and how difficult this research can be. The first case that Steiner examined was very difficult. Why? Nero, there were, let's say, a number of imagined Neros around in Vienna. Now, this is not just a theoretical question of wrong and right, but it is a reality. If you have people who imagine they have been the reincarnation, or they are the reincarnation of Nero, first, of course, it's not possible to have 5 or 6 Neros. But there were people going around with this illusion. We have the same phenomenon today. I could tell you some stories about how many reincarnated Ita Wegmans, the co-worker of Steiner, did I meet? How many Dean Dunlops did I meet? And of course, you can easily feel it cannot be true. But that's one thing. But Steiner had not just the feeling this cannot be true, which is of course true, but all of them. But he knew that's not so difficult, not so easy to decide. Maybe one of them is the real reincarnated Nero. And he makes a pictorial description of this situation, of this beginning of his karma research, later in a lecture in which he speaks about Crown Prince Rudolf and his former life. If the researcher meets such a variety of people who claim any formal individuality, then what happened in the case of Steiner researching Rudolf was that you can be led astray by all sorts of people, whether you believe it or not, it is so, who claimed Nero for themselves and did so with a great deal of fanaticism. The subjective force that emanated from such reborn Neros naturally had to be combated. One had to battle one's way through all this undergrowth. So in an astral jungle. That's important. And I think Steiner says that to his hearers in the Karma and Reincarnation lectures in 1924, to give them a clear idea that this is not just an easy thing to find and be sure about it, the right relation. So the possibility of errors on this field is immense, and you can still see it in publications today. Now, what is the result? Steiner used his spiritual scientific method, which is based on what he calls intuition. Intuition is a knowledge which doesn't depend on sense perception, which is not only having inspiring quality, hearing voices or this and that, but it touches the essence of the thing to be researched. In this case, an individuality that has lived centuries before. You need intuition to be sure. So Steiner actually said in 1924, Schröer was right. Schröer had a right inspiration because he came to say it was Nero. He was Nero. But Schröer was not a scientifically trained spiritual researcher. He was a truthful person who had a great sense of truth. But for Steiner, that was not enough. He would never have spoken about Nero being the past incarnation of Rudolf if he would not have gone beyond. When Steiner had ended his research, that was probably some years after his meeting with Schröer, but he didn't speak about it until the time he gave the great karma reincarnation lectures in his last life year. And when he spoke there about Rudolf, he confirmed that Schroer's inspiration was right. But he did confirm this on a higher research than just inspiration. That was not safe for him enough. And it's never safe in this area. It can be right, it can be wrong. That was not enough as a basis for Steiner's public mentioning this. But it is interesting that Schroer was actually the cause or triggered the search of Steiner in reincarnation questions. And he had the right inspiration, and Steiner made the big jungle work to be more than just inspired about this. This is an interesting fact, revealing a deep also relation between Steiner and Schroer. That was a difficult journey. And I think it's good that people knew and know today, this is really hard work to be sure about a spiritual fact. Not hard work is it to just have some inkling and some feeling and this and that. That is fine. It's not to be criticized, but that cannot be used as a basis for serious spiritual research. Steiner never did. So a long path in karma research was necessary in the first case that Steiner researched. And this was, of course, only one of many, many. I have not counted, but it must have been 150, 200 individuals that Steiner has researched in such a serious way, among others, who was the individuality of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits. Very interesting Ignatius of Loyola example, and Steiner found he later became the Swedish seer Swedenborg, who had no relation to the Catholic Church anymore, who went over, became a natural scientist, and in his 42 or 43rd year, spiritual visions opened in an amazing way. Very amazing. It would be a very interesting subject for itself. I just want to point out that is not something that I think thinking people in the church, and there are also thinking people in the church or in the Jesuit order later, they were not very amused and positively liked this result of Steiner's karma research concerning Loyola and Swedenborg. That would mean that a brave, a good Catholic who prays to his saints, you know, is praying, for example, to the Saint Loyola, Saint Ignatius. But in fact, this Ignatius is not there where he was when he was living. He has even become a member of the non-Catholic communities in the world. So the whole praying business, so to speak, is to be questioned freshly. Are these individuals still where they were, or did they make a remarkable development into something else? We can understand that in the Catholic Church, and I want to bring that in now here, there is also a resistance against the karma research of Steiner's, because Steiner's research seems to take them away the firm ground they are standing on. I don't want to go too far into this direction, just hint. If you would know and you can find out, what did Steiner say about John the Baptist, that has a very great position in the Catholic Church, or about a painter like Raphael, you will have the same problems, because these individuals were not in the same stream before every time when they lived. Now, I want to mention here a fact which is not generally known, that even in the Catholic Church, you have high-positioned persons, namely popes, who are accepting reincarnation. It's not told from the church pulpit. It's not spoken about publicly. And in one case, we know it exactly, that there was a pope who had the conviction reincarnation and karma exist. He knew also Steiner's writing. He studied them, and this was the Slavic Pope John Paul II, who played a great part in the new building of Europe in 1989 and the years before. And he had a conversation with a friend, and this friend wanted to know, what does the church say about reincarnation? And the Pope first said, ask our man for the teaching of Catholicism. This is a special name, I don't remember now. This was the Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Pope Benedict XVI. Thank you. And he first diverted the question, ask him. And the man insisted and said, thank you for the answer, but I would love to know what you think about the question. And then second go of an answer was, well, in the Bible there are passages which seem to speak against, but there are some passages which speak for reincarnation. Thank you, Your Highness or Excellency, I'm not sure. But what do you think about it? Third answer, the most interesting. I know a man who taught philosophy, went to the church daily, and was firmly convinced or believed in reincarnation. This conversation was reported to a man who was in the church for a long time, then left the church. He was in a missionary movement, also long times in Africa, left the church. Why? Because he was attracted by anthroposophy, by reincarnation. And that's why he left the church, because he believed, as almost everyone, reincarnation has no seat in the church. He said that to his advisor for his academic work he did. And then his advisor said to this man, who is called Pietro Archiati, anthroposophists know him somehow, and he gave me a written report of this conversation with his doctor father and Pope Wojtyla. So it's a very direct, almost immediate direct report. And he said, after this report was given of this conversation, which, by the way, ended after the third version of an answer. Wojtyla said, many questions, few answers. And the professor, who was the doctor father of Akiati, who told him this story, said, with the third answer, the professor of philosophy who goes today to the mass daily and is fully convinced of reincarnation, he spoke about himself in a way that cannot be quoted. Because one knows that Wojtyla was teaching philosophy in a, I think it was the priest seminar in Krakow in Poland. So he didn't want to say a lie, but he didn't want to say it in a form that could be quoted. But I think that's quite important that we know there are also people who accept in the church reincarnation, but in the same church, some high-standing people think, yes, Rudolf Steiner is right, he is interesting, but he came too early. It is our mission in the church to prepare humanity for another 100 or 200 years. That is really a belief that is there. And it's maybe one of the noblest oppositions against anthroposophy. Of course, in the eyes of Steiner and others, a wrong conviction too early. On the contrary, but this is existing. And I just wanted to put that in for our American audience, which maybe are in streams of Christianity, which have not a relation yet positively to reincarnation. So don't forget that Wojtyla himself was believing in reincarnation in a hidden way. By the way, as this answer was given like that, Akiati said to his doctor father, who hoped to convince him by this conversation that it is not necessary to leave the church. You have reincarnation as well. That's proved by this conversation. Akiati said, well, if I still had any doubts that I leave the church, they are now removed because that's not honest for me, which I think is an honest answer. A bit dramatic. So that's a situation which sheds light on a certain opposition against the core mission of Steiner, with understandable, but I think also, of course, erroneous arguments. Now let's go on. When Steiner became General Secretary of the Theosophical Society, which I think he did because he knew, he found out, the leading person in that movement at that time, Annie Besant, had concrete experience of her past incarnation, as he himself had, as we have seen before. She had experienced herself as the great philosopher, mystic, heretic Giordano Bruno, who was, as some of you will know, burned for his conviction on stake. Steiner knew that. I cannot go into details, but we know that he had even confirmed it to this lady. So she knew, he knew that, and he accepted it. And I think it is a fruitful thought to think, why was this important for Steiner going into the Theosophical movement? After he had tried to enlighten the scientists, the philosophers of his time, they were not interested. Now he went to the theosophists, who were generally not very scientifically trained, but they were open to spirituality and reincarnation, especially Annie Besant. Now you can imagine, for someone with the core mission of the fiery truth of reincarnation, of karma, it could have been a support to have someone at his side who was literally burned by fire in the last incarnation. So there was a kind of a courage karma around Annie Besant. And at the beginning of his work with Annie Besant in the Theosophical Society, it went very well, till a certain point where she was deviating from her original course. The whole Krishnamurti affair came in. We won't go into that now. And it took an end. But the beginning was good. And she, I think, learned quite a few things by this German general secretary, till it was blown up, and also her own dealing with reincarnation was getting problematic. Also, she knew her past life. She was not safe not to have illusions about the life before, and she made a kind of a deal. She wanted to make a kind of a deal with Steiner at a certain point, in offering him to have been the reincarnation of Saint John the Evangelist. If he accepts her politics with a young, innocent boy, Krishnamurti, she would regard him in the society as John the Evangelist reborn. And of course, this was, for Steiner, impossible, tasteless, and ridiculous. So nothing came of it. But it shows also that someone who has even a reincarnation experience is not, by that alone, safe from illusions. That's a very, I think, very telling point. And then Steiner could not already, in the Theosophical movement, freely speak about what was his core mission, because also Theosophists, they liked to speak about and hear about reincarnation and karma in a general way, but when it get very concrete, they prefer not to go. There's a certain fear. That's important to know. We come to that. Now, Steiner wanted nothing else with this reincarnation core mission than to bring a real significant completion, not competition, but completion of natural scientific way of thinking. For example, he puts it in that way. The natural scientist knows that the higher forms of a skull of animals are transformations of a lower skull of an animal. And we should try to see whatever is in the biography of a soul should be explained out of the biography of the soul of which this special soul comes, namely a past life. That's nothing else that the transformation or metamorphosis thought that was introduced into natural science. Now, as you all know, or some of you, there was a wonderful architecture in Dornach, near here where we are now, of the building of the two cupola building of the Goetheanum. This was like an extract of the new spiritual scientific worldview that Steiner brought into the world at this point in evolution, where reincarnation and karma have to come into consciousness again, full consciousness. So it's no wonder that he said in one of the karma lectures, namely in the one, actually, he talks about Crown Prince Rudolf, Nero. He mentions that the forms of the Goetheanum in Dornach, the very forms, had been designed to awaken in the visitor at least the feeling for reincarnation and karma. They were such mobile metamorphic forms that stimulated the inclination to be open for reincarnation and karma. That was maybe one of the most important elements in this building. Now, what happened to this building? The enemies, and there were two main sources, Masonic and Christian Church, they managed to have it burnt down before it even was opened publicly. It was more or less finished, but it was not yet in public usage. It was built during about 7 years or 8 years almost, 1913, and it was burnt down in New Year's Eve night in 1922. What has this to do with the core mission? I think it has to do with the core mission that if this building would have been there in Europe for at least half a century, many generations would have had the bliss, the good fortune to walk through such a wonderful building, inspire our higher soul and spiritual faculties, just in an artistic way. You wouldn't have to have become a scientific researcher, but you would have been an open soul for the results of spiritual scientific research. And this was blown away in one night. And that is explaining, in a way, the importance of the Karma lectures in 1924, a year later. They were, in a way, a substitute for the destroyed forms of the first Goetheanum. And now these forms were the ideas of concrete karma results in idea form, in form that cannot be destroyed by any fire. That's the connection between the step Steiner made after the burning of the Goetheanum to bring out the forms, the laws of reincarnation and karma, not in an artistic way, which he wanted for many, many people who would have been touched by it, but in thought forms that are there still today and cannot be destroyed. That's a very important connection, I think, you can find between between these lectures and the destroyed forms of the Goetheanum. Now, as this subject is so serious, maybe it's at the right point towards the end to bring in an anecdote which is serious and humorous at the same time. The core mission was something that was also inspiring many pupils of Steiner. And there were some, not all of course, whom Steiner encouraged. Find out. Do some research. Find out your past life and so on. He didn't say that to anyone, of course. And one of them was the priest Friedrich Rittelmeier, who became the founder of what is now called Christian Community. And to him, Steiner said his own experience with Neumann, how it was happening, that he was aware of his past life upon this remark of Neumann. And then he said to him, look, he gave him a kind of an advice for him, for his own research, which is like that. Take careful note as well of what is said to you by others. That was his example. Also, not exclusively. In my own case, it happened that after a lecture, someone came up to me and told me that the lecture had vividly recalled a specific person to him. And he doesn't say what here. At this, my own former incarnation dawned on me. Now he uses this as an advice piece for one of his pupils. And this pupil went away and came back with a certain result. He listened what was said to him. But you can maybe feel that is an ambiguous thing that might work in some case, but it cannot be used as a general recipe. And then he says and comes back, the only thing that someone has so far said to me in a direct and specific way was not in fact correct. This was the assertion by someone of a mediumistic disposition who had only joined the Anthroposophical Society about a year earlier that I had been Pope Alexander VI in my previous incarnation. Now, if you know a little bit about Pope Alexander VI, he was a least pious man. He had about a number of illegitimate children. He was very, very libertinaire. And one knew about his life enough. And Rittelmeier was obviously not very pleased or very happy to have been told from outside that he had been this pope. So, being an honest person, he comes back to Steiner. And Steiner listened to him. And then he said, when I related this to Dr. Steiner along with other comments by the same person, this clairvoyant, mediumistic, he seemed a little amused. Not bad, he replied, with a scarcely noticeable smile. Anyone who knows, Rittelmeier goes on writing, about Pope Alexander Borgia, it was a Borgia Pope's, will understand that this gave me no sense of relief. "But, Herr Doctor," I said, "that does not accord with all that we have discussed about former incarnations." "No," he replied, "the person referred to is not correct either. But he did converse with you in the spiritual world." Then he went on talking about astral complexes. Unfortunately, I cannot recall precisely what expression he used, as I was in a state of some agitation, by means of which mediumistic individuals can be led upon false tracks. Astral complexes, I think what Steiner actually said was astral sheath, or, to use a coarse, not very polite expression, astral excrements, which are produced in the karma loka when the soul goes on higher planes, what is left back. So a medium can hit this and mix it up with the individuality, and it can happen that some astral sheath goes into someone who incarnates and has this trait in his own astral body when he comes to Earth. So there is something which can be from an encounter with an astral sheath, maybe with the individuality, but it's not the person directly itself. I think that is a source of great error and confusion also in today's publications about reincarnation and karma, that people pick something up before coming down into incarnation from another individual or from the rest of another individual, and find this, and find naturally a kind of an affinity with this person, but it's not identity, it's not the individuality itself. That is a source of great confusion, I think, which is also actual and active today. So I found it interesting that Steiner first didn't react shocked when hearing about allegedly Rittelmeyer was Pope Alexander VI, one of the worst Borgia popes. I think it's a little lesson here. He smiles, says not bad, and is amused, and says by that, "Dear Dr. Rittelmeyer, if this would be the truth, you would have to live with it. You should be able for this thought." But as he was obviously really bending here and there, soul was very unhappy, he relieved him and said this explanation, which I think is wonderful. You find this all in the book we have shown before, because I find it very illustrative for today's experiences. Now, Steiner himself said in 1922 to Walter Janus Stein, no, to a teacher of the Waldorf School in Stuttgart, opened 1919, "In 80 years, I will come back in America." This was said by this teacher to Walter Janus Stein, who was a colleague in the school. He noted it in the notebooks he had. I quoted it here and in other places as quite a serious, helpful thing. Why? Why helpful? Let's begin with that. We know from the lectures on Ahriman, which we have been talking about yesterday, in our talk yesterday, Ahriman will incarnate or has incarnated at the beginning of this third millennium. Now, when Steiner is back, also in America, the place where Ahriman is incarnating, or has already, that means he is a contemporary. And that means there is someone with a great spiritual faculty of enlightening interested human beings about the deeper nature of, well, we used the term of Katrin Austin Fitz yesterday, of someone that can be called Mr. Global, because he is all over the world active. So to know that Steiner, who has brought this great wisdom about Lucifer, Christ, Ahriman, is a contemporary of this Ahrimanic age, I think is helpful, good to know. He is not just standing aloft in a nirvana while the world is almost taken asunder, but he is back to help. Now, Ahriman, we have to mention him again towards the end, is not pleased with this karma research. In 1924, Steiner says, and it is a written thing, he says, we can find it, unrestricted revelation of karma truth, karmic truth, is what Ahriman fears most. Why? He has no relation to the development of the human being in time. He wants to put us, link us very firmly with the world of space, here and now. Of course, it's important to be in the here and now, in the here especially. But if people come to understand the karma dimension, they have a freer stand in the world and cannot be as easily manipulated. The secret of good manipulation is keep people ignorant about their own spiritual being. Then they follow, they do whatever you want them to do. Now, it is Ahriman who hates this revelation, but it is on the contrary in the intention of Michael to bring into the world precisely what is the core mission of Steiner. This is a Michaelic mission. Michael wants us, if you like, to overcome the fear of karma revelation. Otherwise, we cannot understand life in a deeper sense. And Steiner said in the same context, that was a lecture in 1920 here, February 6, for those who want to follow that up, it's in this volume of the complete works that he speaks about this. Long time, wide range, destiny of the idea and the experience of reincarnation, conscious, semi-conscious, totally forgotten, half conscious, and again fully conscious in a scientific way. And in this lecture he makes a little remark, and with that I would like to close. Without this new knowledge of reincarnation, cultural life on earth will be obliterated. Thank you for having more patience than usual to follow.